Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Your journey, our passion.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 225 for January 10th, 2014 Detroit Auto Show preview. Watch Auto Line After Hours live at Autoline.tv every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or by following the links on our website. Remember, all next week, we'll be webcasting live from the North American International Auto Show in Detroit. On Monday and Tuesday, we'll be covering the big reveals of the show, thanks to our signature sponsor, Chrysler, starting at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. We've already got a lot of great guests lined up, including the new president and CEO of Hyundai, Dave Zukowski, and Ludwig Willisch, who runs BMW North America. Then on Wednesday and Thursday, we'll be webcasting the second annual Autoline Supplier Symposium, thanks to our signature sponsor, Ford. Those shows start at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. I'll be moderating panels organized by groups like the OESA, the Canadian Consulate, and the U.S.-China Automotive Exchange. Once again, that's live 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Monday and Tuesday, and 2 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday and Thursday. And, of course, you can find all of that on our website, Autoline.tv. Boy, that was a lot to read. one thing we got to get to talking about in this show is Jim Hall. Jim Hall's been on this show a lot. He's a great friend of Autoline, and you guys know him well, and he's gone to work for General Motors. Oh, dead silent reaction.
Okay, didn't he work for General Motors at one time?
He did, absolutely.
And so now he's returning.
Totally different role. Back then, he was in, I want to say, product development planning, mm-hmm. and GM actually embedded him in Japan inside Toyota. This is when they were doing a lot of the Geo stuff and the NUMMI thing was going and all that. And Jim actually was living in Japan working for mm-hmm. GM. This time, I guess he's like a staff director. He's going to be doing research, competitive research for them.
It sounded like it was a similar position as like Dave Champion at Nissan when he left Consumer Reports.
Oh, interesting.
To Nissan and to evaluate where GM stacks up against the competition.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they had that Lutz created
that right, team
when he had the automotive
right.
guy
team, and I don't know if that means Jim is going to be working with those people or
are they still there? I know what Ron Sessions has left.
Yeah, Sessions is gone. It was Keebler, Sessions, and
Rich Seppos.
Seppos, yeah.
I think that Keebler's still there, so they're doing something.
They are doing something.
But, weren't those guys basically doing engineering type work?
Well, they were
evaluation.
Evaluations. It was more of an engineering thing. And for the people who may not know who Jim Hall is, he's the guy who sometimes is here and he knows everything on Earth, like everything on Earth.
The man who knows too much.
Yeah, I mean, he just basically has some sort of a photographic memory and
right.
knows obscure things about automobiles that even people who own the cars don't know about them, and even the right. biggest car fanatics don't know about them. So clearly, I mean, Jim's a guy who really knows this industry like few people do. And you know, we've talked a lot about the issue of, you know, the new General Motors with the, you know, the Mary Barra regime and so on. And I mean, I think that hiring Jim is both a good and a gutsy move. I mean, because the guy is nothing if not opinionated. I mean,
yeah, and it's
I mean, he knows what he thinks.
Right.
You need people like that within your company, though. You need people that will give you an honest answer and really say, hey, this sucks.
Right.
And especially with coming from somebody like Jim, that really matters, I think, and it carries a lot of weight.
Sure, he's got a lot of credibility.
How long they'll listen to him is another thing. That'll be the other question.
It will be, but as long as he's bringing out really good points that it's hard for management to argue with,
Sure.
They're going to say, yeah, this is good feedback to the company.
And is he going to be then more or less in the whole product development arena? I mean, that he's doing competitive analysis that would feed into that? Because I got to believe that then with Mark Royce heading that up, I mean, Mark's the sort of guy who would listen, who would be receptive and you know, wouldn't beat Jim down or leave Jim to the point where you're thinking that, you know, you're speaking truth to power, but, you know, at some point you just say, screw it, I'm tired of doing this because nobody's listening to me. And I think that he would be listened to by a guy like Mark Royce.
Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure that it's got to do with product development-related involvement as much as doing research that what he describes as actionable. He says GM does a ton of market research, but they're very, really good studies of things. It may not necessarily say, here's what you can act on right now to do.
Mm-hmm.
So from a very product-focused standpoint. So based on the little that I know of what he's told me, it sounds more like that's what he's going to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a good move, I think, for him, no doubt,
yeah.
and for them. I mean, I don't see how it can... When you have smart guys like Jim, I mean, they ought to be used as they can be deployed within an organization. And he's been something of a maverick, and so it'll be interesting to see how that goes for him.
Right,
but, should be great.
So General Motors gets Jim Hall and Alan Mulally staying at Ford
for the rest of this year,
right.
And then. I think it's better that he came out and said it and just put some stability in there. And
sure. Why didn't he say that 3 months ago, though?
Maybe he was courting the idea.
Oh, he was. That's my read of it.
Well, then as we talked about, I mean, there was that whole thing that, you know, the people in Silicon Valley were basically saying, no, he's on the outs, and there are all kinds of other people that would be more well-suited to that, you know, people who have a truly more tech background. And so... you know, what he, you know, at some point the guy's got to retire. I mean, geez, he's been working for a long time, whether, you know, at Boeing and now at Ford.
He might not have enough money.
For what?
He's been saving for an island down in Belize. I don't know.
Let's see. You got to believe he could get one. But, but I mean, it sort of raises an interesting point when you think about that. I mean, that if there was even this discussion of a auto executive going to a technology company. And, you know, and this week CES going on in Las Vegas, you know, the Consumer Electronics Show. And, you know, I begin to wonder whether that isn't going to become more of an auto show than some of the auto shows that are going on across the country, where, you know, some of the smaller
ones. I kind of have to disagree with you, though. I think that an auto executive could go to a software company easier than a software executive could come to an automotive company.
I think you're right.
Why?
The manufacturing process. That there's so many things that are involved with making a car and getting all those bits and pieces and all those things together into one place and having somebody put them together, as opposed to manufacturing software, where, well, it's all made in China, but you can download it, you know, in your bathroom. And... and so, I mean, I think that there's some...
So you're suggesting that big campus of people that are working in Redmond, Washington now are basically just, I don't know.
I don't think they're manufacturing, though.
No, but they're... But if they're creating products, right, isn't that basically what the auto industry is doing?
They're assembling ones and zeros.
Yeah.
That's all they're doing.
Okay, and we're assembling nuts and bolts.
They're actual physical things.
Yes. I do not dispute that one minute. But organizationally...
And process-wise.
Organizationally, you still have many of the same functions within a software company as you do within a manufacturing operation.
That's true. But, you know, to Scott's point, the assets you manage are all people and some machines that they can write code on.
Right.
You know, as an automaker, boy, you got a lot of assets to manage. I mean, a ton of acid strung all over the place. Not that software code companies don't string stuff across the place, but it's moves electronically.
Look at the Windows, whatever we're on now.
Yeah, 8.1.
You could put out a crappy version of it and then just have people keep putting patches on it. You can't do that with a car.
True.
You can't go,
I've been to Cuba, and that's exactly how they do it. They just put patches on the car.
Well, the Escape was one where there was a horrible launch, and there was patches. But a car can't do that. And if you're software
turns up. You just said a car could do that.
Well, you can't do it very long, that's for sure.
Okay.
And I guess if software craps out, it could kill you, but...
At some point, the code has to become stable. So, I mean, I got to give them that credit. But I don't want to diss the software developers around the world who happen to like cars.
Who will hack into your computer.
Yeah, they're going to hack into your computer. I'm supporting them.
We also saw new car sales in the last week, too. And anything stand out to you guys as you sit back? Gary pulls out his numbers, his...
Well, since this show started, I think Ford has sold, 55 F-150s.
Yeah.
Their numbers are their F-Series is just incredible.
It's on fire.
It was like 34 years or something, the largest selling vehicle, running. It's just relentless in terms of the numbers.
But remember, it's somewhat exaggerated in that,
heavy duties and
up through the F-650s or however high it goes now.
Yeah.
But it was sort of interesting. Okay, so the number for F-Series, whatever that,
that includes
150,
medium
250,
duty trucks,
350, right. Rockets, 450, yeah. Rockets, what have you. Is 763,402. But what was really incredible is that's 18.3% more than in 2012.
Right.
I mean, what a huge increase in the number of, that's already a huge number. Yeah. Because you see some of these things like, you have the C-Max had a percentage change year over year of 164.6%. You're like, holy moly, 164%. Yeah, right. What is that? Well, it went from 13,309 to 35,210. Woo! They probably sold that many F-150s since we've been talking about the F-150.
Yeah. It just shows you how incredible that, and it pays all the bills. I mean, pickups are paying for what Detroit's doing. Uh-huh. So,
And it's sort of interesting that, it wasn't that long ago when there was this discussion that all the car, the auto companies were going to become more car centric and less truck centric.
Yeah.
And now that's completely gone away.
Wow. No, I don't think it's gone. I think that there's still more cars in crossover sold than trucks. Certainly pickups. Pickups overall have gone down a lot. I mean, compared to what they were selling before, and a lot of crossovers, which count as trucks, are far from being a truck.
Yeah, they're not trucks. They're trucks.
More like trucks than they're like cars from the point of view of where they came from.
Hey, I'd say make them all trucks and then you can blow through cafe. Way to hedge your bets on that.
So that's why they are classified as
trucks. Oh, yes. The HHR. Truck.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, so Ford breaks it down, cars, utilities, and trucks. Okay. And so cars is 836,433. Trucks is 937,143, and utilities come in at 720,342. So I would be more willing to put some of those utilities more on the truck side, which then makes that number even more enormous.
But some of the trucks should go, or the utilities should go on the car side, too. Is the Escape in there?
Well, they just have these macro categories. But would the Explorer be... A car?
No. Explorer is definitely. It's body on frame.
So it'd be, it's not the new one. No, the new one is a unibody.
They still list it as body on frame themselves.
Whatever.
It's a utility.
It's utility. It's a truck.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a truck. But no, so that's a problem. I mean, and Silverado was up 14.8%. And
Ram was up strong, too.
Ram was up.
They're all ahead of the industry average.
The truck segment is growing. There's no question. Market share wise, it's growing.
21% for the Ram. Yeah, the Ram's on fire.
Yeah,
I mean it's huge increase in. So it's sort of interesting to see. I mean, and you look at other vehicles, I mean, it's incredible how much trucks are doing for Chrysler.
I actually, when you look at Chrysler, I think that Chrysler is in the most trouble when it comes to trucks. If there's any volatility tied to high gas prices, if something gas shoots up to $5 a gallon and truck sales go down like it did in whatever year that was, 2005,
or just a recession, you know.
I think that Chrysler is the most susceptible to damage. I think that Ford, with the utility and pickup and car, one third,
right.
Or, you know, 40 here, 30, you know, yeah, I think that it's a nice balance. That's why, Toyota and Honda did so well during the high gas prices in that recession, because they don't have any trucks.
Right.
And the trucks that they do have aren't really trucks.
Well, that's not true for
Toyota.
The
Titan and Tundra guys may not agree with that statement, but.
So you got the Tacoma. It's a truck.
And that Tacoma,
it's a frame.
2014 is going to lose market share.
With the new Colorado and Canyon. Yeah, sure it will.
Well, but that's due to an entrant versus anything about it. Although
it's 412 years old.
What we could see, though, is that the midsize market expands as people say, hey, there's a great opportunity to do that. And is that going to happen at the expense of the full-size?
I don't even want to talk about the midsize segment. It's just a frustrating thing that all the, especially in Detroit, where they all say, well, I mean, because the Colorado is nice, but it's still really big.
Yeah, right. Gary made that point about, I think, the wheelbase, the smallest wheelbase was 120 inches.
Yeah, something like that. So I looked and so I went back to the S10 numbers. And so the largest S10 you could buy when that was available is smaller than the smallest Colorado that you're going to be able to.
And so, I mean,
it's just, yeah.
Until somebody gets serious about bringing in a small pickup, I just won't even, you know, play with the debate. I understand the thing with Colorado could gobble up Silverado sales, and I understand all the logic, but to me, there's not a true small pickup available. So who cares?
Who cares? The thing that I found interesting in the numbers, if you look at plug-ins, hybrids, electrics, especially on the plug-in and hybrids or electric side, massive percentage gains. But it's a bit of a mixed bag. The Chevy Volt sold more than any of those vehicles, but its sales actually went down. And
1.6% drop year over year.
Right, which I found interesting. The Nissan Leaf and the Tesla S up massively, but coming off very limited inventory from the year before.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a key reason why you're seeing so many big percentage changes. And then the rate of growth, even though it's still very good, but really started to taper off in the fourth quarter and December especially. Now you're going into the winter. I don't know if that has some effect or whatever, but so that's one thing that I took out of the numbers.
The
torrid pace of growth is evening out some.
Do you think that we'll start seeing, as more models enter the segment, and there's still a bunch more to come,
that
the oldest vehicles in that group will start to see more sales decline?
Well, you know, look, Tesla has had the luxury electric segment to itself, essentially. You know, it's the best luxury electric out there. But now here comes the Cadillac ELR. Here comes the BMW i3. Will Tesla maintain its current sales rate, or will it lose sales to these other guys? That I'll really want to watch. But then Tesla's coming out with its Model X. So even if it loses some S sales, as long as it shows X growth, you know, it can argue that, oh, we're attacking our own market. It's not like we're losing to the other guy.
Will it be building both?
Yes.
Yeah.
See, but I think the more interesting thing is, to your point, is that if we go away from the, you know, the luxury and we go more into the mainstream vehicles, and so if we begin to talk about hybrids like Prius and its various manifestations and the Ford products that are hybrids and so on, whether we're going to see more growth in hybrids as a whole, or whether they'll basically stay the same pool of people that have been buying hybrids. And with more entrants, that means that the percentages that each of those companies would have would begin to get smaller and smaller.
I think you'll still see hybrid growth. I don't think it'll be 20% every year. I think it'll just be plugging away.
People are going to get their hybrid whether they even know it's under the hood or not.
Right.
Because for CAFE, there's so much, electrification, as it's being called, really, that's coming into cars. And there's probably no way around CAFE for any segment, except for some of the smallest cars, to avoid some sort of hybrid system. So, when you look at hybrid sales, too, overall, would you guys count these mild hybrids that GM's got? I think GM's the fourth largest hybrid seller in the U.S. market. But,
So does e-Assist count as being
e-Assist
a hybrid?
Does e-Assist count? I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I mean, I think it's hybrids are like pornography, when you see it.
Didn't the Supreme Court say that?
So I had a Fusion Energy plug-in hybrid dropped off this afternoon at the office, and I drove home, and according to the little dial, and I just can't figure this out because I kept pushing buttons, and I kept getting new readings, and things were happening. I got 124.6 miles per gallon.
Of course you did. Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. I could just drive that car forever, right?
Well, about, 19 miles.
Yeah, well, there was the little battery looking thing like a.
It's Mark Phelan.
Yes,
Mark Phelan, put a mic on, man.
My apologies, it's insane out there.
Oh, the traffic is crazy.
Anyway, and I managed to interrupt what was probably a brilliant point, but here
probably not. We can only hope, and perhaps the interruption was actually a benefit to me. Excuse me, I can come over and just smack me, make me stop talking.
I gotta say, we should let the audience know, we're deep in the snow belt this week, man, and it's been a lot of snow, but I'm having a blast driving in this stuff. Now, I've been real lucky. I had a Jeep Cherokee with the Trailhawk edition with Blizzaks on it. That was like go anywhere, do anything kind of mobility. And now I'm driving an all-wheel drive Buick Regal. It's not quite as good through the snow that the Cherokee was, but it's still pretty good.
I have a Buick Encore, all-season radials. It's been awesome. It's got a little bit more clearance than a car, which has come in really handy a couple of times. And
the snow is that deep.
It is deep, and there's only been a couple of times where you're like, I mean, we all probably drive way too fast in the snow anyway because it's.
Who told you?
You don't need to add the in the snow part. Yeah. Just leave it. We all drive too fast.
Well, you could.
Snow part especially. And especially when you've got the capability, like I had in this Jeep, of going anywhere. And, I'm constantly reminded of the George Carlin line. Have you ever noticed that anyone slower than you is a moron? Mm-hmm. And anyone faster than you is a maniac?
Well, and the other thing is I was real happy that it had GM vehicles because all the GM vehicles have remote start. And when it was minus 10, remote start
is...
Oh,
you guys are wimps.
You're
polluting the atmosphere. Sitting out there drinking coffee with the engine running, doing nothing.
I'm driving a 2014 Malibu that has auto stop. So during the last 45 minutes it took me to crawl 12 miles, I was auto stopping a lot. So every time I stopped, the engine shut off. That made up for all the remote starts I'm going to be doing.
Well, it's bad. You're sipping your coffee and you haven't seen the snow fall off the windshield yet. So you auto-started again the second time. And your gas mileage is about 8.
Yeah. Right. Well, in addition to the snow, you got to say it's been damn cold here.
But
we had, record
lows.
Low highs. Was it?
Lows.
Yes.
Oh.
Record lows.
Record low
right.
highs.
But even the highs were record low.
The day was the lowest it had ever been as well, I think. Yes.
Something like that. Yeah. So it's just been brutal.
But this has been obviously record cold, but this is kind of what winter in the Great Lakes is supposed to look like, too.
Exactly, Mark.
I mean, it's white, fresh snow. It's pretty.
If this was 40 years ago, this story would not be all over the media.
Yeah.
They would go, hey, it's snowy outside. Duh, it's winter.
No,
in fact, I remember I got a couple of emails from people, the blizzard of 78. clips oh, they were sending me.
Yeah.
And people couldn't get out of their houses for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
This, I mean, it was challenging, but it was nothing like that.
Right. And like I said, I've been having a lot of fun. In fact, it's funny, in the last 2 weeks, I've gone back to something I haven't done in a long time, of left foot braking with an automatic transmission. And, boy, it's real funny that after, you know, for doing donuts, it's hard to do donuts with the stupid stability control unless you're on a really slick, unless you shut it off, right. But, no, I love driving in the snow. Where else can you be, I mean, absolutely ragged edge, 10 tenths, fighting it all the way, and you're going 35 miles
right.
an hour?
Yeah.
It's awesome. Yeah. I love it. And you're white-knuckled, even at 35. So,
And you are. It's taking every inch of skill you can muster, but the consequences of getting it wrong are virtually nil. You slide into a bank of soft snow.
As long as that's what's in front of you and not the cement mixer coming down the other way.
See, and I have a feeling that the reason it took us all so long to get here was because there was somebody who was in the moron category who was driving.
It's a four-wheel drive SUV or pickup that's in the ditch. It always is.
But if they are, they're halfway to Lansing because I never saw them. I mean, the backup is just going forever. And Moron and Maniac was by far the nicest thing that I called anybody in front of me today.
Yeah, but you got great fuel economy, Mark. Come on. It's just, look at the bright side.
Right.
But, before we get away from the sales thing, and last year we talked about this a lot and the Dodge Dart, which didn't seem to be doing very well. And these guys got to get credit because the sales this year over last up 230%.
But what's the final number? What was the total units sold?
83,388.
Yeah, that's okay.
But from where it looked, I mean, it looked as though, they were going to get nowhere. I think they've really pulled it off.
And for a good part of the year, they were showing steady growth on the monthly number, mm-hmm. which would I'm sure they hope indicate that they're building a sustainable level.
Right,
and it's a nice little car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've been making improvements or coming out with additions to it, which were coming all along. But that thing should be up at 125,000 units or something.
What was the Camry final number at?
I don't have it, but it was something like 404,000, I believe. And I know that was one of your big concerns that people weren't. But it was like, so Camry was here, Accord was here. But what was number three?
Doesn't matter.
Civic?
No.
No, this is in the midsize cat. Well, no, actually, it doesn't matter. But
in midsize.
But
in midsize?
Overall.
It's got to be Altima. Overall. Altima. I was going to say Altima.
I talked to a lot of people and was trying to make them guess what it was, and nobody would guess Altima. And, and that's like, how crazy is that? That here's this, it's like 330,000 units sold. Last year it was also a really great selling car. And nobody even thinks about it. Why is that? I don't understand.
That's a good point, Gary.
I don't understand.
That's a real good point. I don't know.
And,
It doesn't have the cachet that the other two above it do.
Well, but I would think that a lot of people would say Fusion.
Right.
Or would say Malibu.
Did Fusion top 300?
That's a good question. No. 295,000.
Wow.
The Lolly could have bought 6,000 of them just to push it to 301.
Maybe that's what he's saving up for.
Hey, let's take
Island and more Fusion.
And more Fusion. Drive around it.
Let's take a quick break and then come back, and I want to hear what you guys think about the auto show coming up. So, Ben, let's take that break.
There's only one car company in America that's never made a single car. And while you won't find Firestone cars on any showroom floor, they're out there, running better, faster, stronger, longer. No, we don't build cars. But make no mistake, Firestone is a car company. So whatever you drive, drive a Firestone.
AutoLine offers you one of the most effective ways to get your marketing message in front of the decision makers in the global automotive industry. Contact Stacy Eamon today.
Okay, so Auto Show is right around the corner for all of us. I'm sure it starts Sunday and goes to Saturday, right? If you go to the Hyundai party at the end.
Saturday. There's an event on Saturday.
An event?
Before the show?
Yep.
What? No, you can't give it away, probably.
Oh, there's no event.
Yeah, never mind.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't want to know. I got enough I have to do on Sunday.
Okay, who's going to steal the headlines at the show?
Ford.
You think?
Yeah.
F-150?
Yeah, despite the fact that they stubbornly refuse to officially admit it's coming.
Has anyone seen it? You know, sometimes they bring in the buff books ahead of time, Scott. So you
this have, time they did not.
Okay, so...
I
think that's awesome. Peter DeLorenzo and I have been bemoaning for years. When are they going to hold something big back so the big splash is at the show instead of leaking everything way ahead? So we get to the show and we go, that's the new one who I've already seen.
Man, I couldn't disagree more.
Really?
I think that we have a chance to cover it better if we see it in advance. And honestly, even if you have an embargo and somebody breaks the embargo, if you can't introduce a vehicle and still hold something that's worth reporting on when you actually roll it out onto stage, you need a new communications team. But I think the idea of, there are no surprises at the show, only for us pampered journalists. I mean, for the rest of the world who weren't at the embargoed briefings, this stuff is all
no,
new.
No, that's exactly what I'm talking about, us pampered
okay.
journalists.
In that case,
but, I mean,
fine.
Because that's what the media days are for, is the, you know, the big reveal is it's not so much for the public, is, I mean, we're the conduit to the public.
But I think that we should be able to generate the excitement that they feel when we write about it for them for the first time.
I think that we generate more excitement when we don't know about it.
Right.
And we get to the show.
See, because and the other thing you think about, Mark, is that, okay, if you didn't know about it, okay, and then it comes out, then you write your story and, you know, it gets this much space, right? Well, then as time goes on, you have the opportunity to give it this much space again and this much space again and this much space again. And therefore, it has a longer life than if you have the big story when all the other noise is happening. Because
that's why
all these other vehicles.
That's why I like the way that most of the Europeans do it. We're going to release most of the hard facts about the vehicle 2-3 weeks before the show. We will have our big flashy press conference. We will make more news with our executives then. That's the way I like to do it, frankly.
Yeah, no, and you know, basically you're right. For most products, an automaker should do the pre-reveal info. But I'm arguing every now and then you should hold something big back just for this big bash so you become the buzz of the show. And, you know, the national media does turn its attention to what's going on at the Detroit Auto Show. And now Joe Biden's coming, you know, the vice president's. There's going to bring an additional media wing to it. The politicos will all be here, too. So, you know, if you can be the buzz, you can also get the national media reporting your buzz. And that's why I'm arguing every now and then you should hold back something big.
You know, what surprises me about the show is that the number of true concepts are just declining.
They don't exist.
They don't have the money.
Do you think that's because they all had such hard times with money 3 years ago? Or is that a long-term trend? Are the number of real far-out concepts going to stay virtually non-existent like they have been for the last 4 years?
That.
Yeah.
Well, you know, building a concept car can be really expensive. If you want everything beautifully executed, I mean, you're talking a lot of craftsmanship, a lot of labor hours going into building this thing.
You'll see Honda concepts, which are the car.
The car without the door handles or something like that.
Half the time it's
trick.
Got license plate brackets on it. Yeah. Right. It calls it a concept.
Right. Factory wipers.
Right. Then they go to Chicago and launch the production version.
Yeah.
Right.
You get two press conferences. With them.
But, I mean, but you know, you talk about the buzz. I mean, just think about, remember when Sunday used to be concept car day and Chrysler would have half a dozen concepts, and General Motors would have half a dozen concepts, and Ford would have a half dozen concepts. And I mean, it was.
I miss it. I just don't know if it's gone forever or not. I'm curious. But I miss it.
Concepts now are in CAD, and people are messing around with them there, and they're not ever building those cars.
Right. Yeah, but you got to show the public, you know.
And but I mean, it's show. I mean, you know, this is supposed to be a show, right? I mean, this is, and isn't that part of the excitement of saying, wow, look at that exotic thing? And maybe someday there'll be something like that real, and wouldn't that be cool?
Well, and remember things like the Jeep that had an engine in the front and the back and all four steer independently. I mean, we knew they would never build that in a million years, but it got them, it had to be a priceless amount of publicity.
Right. The motorcycle that Wolfgang Bernhard
Tomahawk
came rolling out on.
With the Viper engine.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, no, that stuff is really cool. And I'd like to see somebody throw out, here's the 2030 fully autonomous car. What would that look like? No steering wheel, no gear shift lever, no pedals, you know. In fact, completely reconfigure the interior of the vehicle. You know, make them dream cars again, you know. That's how you get the public saying, wow, the auto industry is cool. That's how you get kids going into college saying, man, that's the industry I want to graduate with a degree to get into. That's where you get the public, you know, saying, give me more, you know, I want to be part of the future. And then, you know, you can give them whatever you're selling.
Right. So, I mean, the question is, wouldn't that be advantageous for them from a marketing point of view to basically say, you know, we're thinking about the future, we got this cool ideas, or we have these retro ideas, or we have, you know, this imagination and this technology, and we really want to show the public that, you know, we're
and here's something that's just beautiful and you've never seen anything like it before. I mean, it sounds like we'd all love it and we don't understand why they don't do it.
Right.
Well, especially nowadays, because auto shows aren't the only place we see reveals anymore. In fact, there's a lot of things that'll be revealed that have already been revealed through other means, whether it be Facebook reveals or the way that Ford did the Mustang, and last year GM did the pickups, that they did it beforehand, and it created all this buzz, and now they're going to pull the tarp off the Mustang again. And so...
Right.
It's one where, you know...
Well, this will be the first time the public gets to see the Mustang.
And that's worth remembering.
And, I mean, you know, that's a car, too, that does look better in person than it does in most of the photos.
And I've got to think it's one of the relatively few cars that people who would not normally go to an auto show will turn out to see. And people will come a long distance to see the Mustang 6 months before their neighbor does at the Pittsburgh show or whatever it may be.
But, I mean, because, that's truly an exciting production car.
Yep.
Okay. So let's say they were coming out with a new Taurus. I mean, would that be the same? I mean, would the reaction be that sort of thing? I don't think the person would, you know, skip the Pittsburgh show. They'd go to Pittsburgh and call it good.
Yeah, shockingly enough, I think you're right.
And this is a thing that you know, so if you don't have that, then why don't you have this whole, you know, fleet of cars that are just incredibly cool? That are, you spend a lot of money and but you know what, if it resonates with the public, isn't that a halo for you? Isn't what halo vehicles are all about, to get people to come in and buy the cars, and to say, wow, you know, I saw that thing at the auto show, that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen, but you know, I've got to buy the Malibu because, you know, I need a car, but that's the company I'm going to go with. I mean, I just don't understand why it's gone. You know, and there are cars that will be concepts, but again, yeah, the license plate brackets are there. I mean, it's a, you know, basically a pre-production vehicle. I just don't get it. It's too bad.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Honda's really good at selling the dream, because Honda does so many different things. You know, they got jets and this little robot that plays a trumpet, and you know, snow blowers and
Osmo.
So you know, so they've got this coolness factor to them. And they've been able to get away with has Honda ever really done a concept car? I mean, what we would call, now there is a concept car.
Back in the heyday of Tokyo, did they do them? Because I don't remember anything since then, but it used to be
everybody. We need
everybody
Jim Paul here. He would know and could quote the world.
But wouldn't we count the first time we saw the forthcoming NSX as being a concept car? I mean, not the second time we saw it or the third time we saw it.
But again, the NSX, that's what it's going to be.
Well, but anyway, the first one was sort of more exotic than the one that it's going to be.
Is it?
We'll see.
Yes.
Okay.
I believe
okay.
so. No, but I mean, it's not just them, though. I mean, it's you know, I was looking at
and just weird stuff. I mean, remember what four or five years ago when Toyota had, what was it, the Bat One, that little compact front-wheel drive pickup truck.
Yeah, the hybrid truck.
And it was a hybrid as well. I mean, no way on earth were they ever going to build that, but it was something that, you know, people came down to the show to see, and it convinced a few of them to go to the Toyota stand.
Sure, or the when Chevy had the Nomad, remember that? That was very cool.
And, in fact, who does good concept cars now? I'd have to give that to GM. You know, the Cadillac El Mirage is one of the most stunning concept cars in quite a while. And I think GM is good at that. Ed Welburn's group especially is good at creating this dream. You know, it doesn't even have to be what's going to be. It just has to be the promise of that.
Right. The Bolt concept really did a number. And that was a car that we didn't know about that was rolling out. Mm-hmm. But you remember how that looked, and it had a real futuristic look. I mean, eventually it became a car, but the concept vehicle was...
Which more dramatic.
Over the top.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you mentioned the El Mirage, too.
Did that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was thinking about the El Mirage. The other name as well as Cadillac that came to mind for me was BMW, because at the last 3 or 4 years, they've had an art car that they would show at this, you know, show of Italian exotics that takes place someplace in Switzerland, you know, in the spring. And it's completely unbuildable and gorgeous. And cars like the El Mirage are the only two things I can think of that are really sort of aspirational images that design organizations are putting out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something that they ought to pay attention to. Hey, we've got a bunch of questions that have come in here, so why don't we get to that? And I'll start throwing this stuff out, and hopefully you guys can respond to it. Artwork says, the new 200, I'm sure he means the Chrysler 200, is interesting. The front is a little bland for the intensely detailed... The front is a little bland for the intensely detailed rear. Hope it's bigger than the Dart, though. I read the Dart has decent room.
It's big. I mean, the Dart's nice and roomy, but this there's no way anybody's going to mistake this for the Dart or comparison shop the two of them. I mean, this is a legitimate midsize car with, I think, plenty of room.
Are there real
and I like the front.
Yeah. Are there any pictures of the 200?
I mean, the real ones, because there is those...
I can neither confirm nor deny the realness of the pictures, but if you typed in 2015 Chrysler 200, you would find pictures.
Mm-hmm. Things that look like they were for an advertising shoot that somebody snuck out there.
And I remember I was standing next to you, Scott, when we saw the 200 for the first time, and it got the approval of you. You said it had the official stamp.
Hey, look. Ben's got a picture up of it. Yeah. That looks more like an artist rendition. I don't know if it's the shot or...
Let's say, if found, please return to Jalopnik. Was that that?
Yeah. That almost looks like it's not, you know...
That one doesn't look
metal.
As good. But yeah, it's a nice-looking car.
Very close to that, right.
You know, I don't know if I can say that without breaking an embargo, but if it existed...
If it existed.
It was a nice-looking car.
If they were to make a new one...
And they called it the 200.
Yes.
Okay, Mike DeWight wants to know, will GM have a big surprise at the auto show? He goes on to predict they'll have a new EV concept to battle Tesla.
I would be surprised if that turns out to be true.
I would be very surprised if that turns out to be true.
It could
be
a great idea. I mean, I hope somebody at GM's listening.
I don't think they will.
Wouldn't that cannibalize ELR, and they've really got to make ELR work?
I would debut an aluminum pickup.
If you were GM, really?
Yes. No, you would debut a production aluminum pickup
on sale tomorrow.
He also goes on to ask, why not show concept cars as 3D holograms? I think they'd love to do
I'd
that.
I'd like that.
But is the resolution good enough?
Well, you know, I mean, it wouldn't be good enough if, for example, that they put one like right here. I mean, and so if we were in... the show on the show floor, it wouldn't work. But if we went in, if they actually built what they call a cave, which is a complicated acronym for basically a virtual reality area that you go into, and they could display it there, it'd look damn good. But again, you would have to meter the people in, because it would not be a giant place that you could see from, you know, way back there.
So it sounds like it'd be more expensive than building the actual concept.
Yes and no, but I mean, you could do that.
Take more energy too.
Yeah,
So
I've never seen anybody use a holographic display. Have you guys ever? There was big talk in the early '90s that CAD/CAM displays were going to go holographic, and Ford even claimed that it was going to do holographic design, but I think that was a smokescreen just to make everybody else chase off after that.
Well, actually, Ford did have some. They were doing a lot of interior design work, and I remember being in the product development center, and you had to put on goggles, and you sat in a seat, and basically you were
gloves
reaching
too, right.
Gloves? They had the gloves, but in this case, I mean, you actually like saw buttons and knobs and things, and you were going for them, but they didn't exist, and it was truly.
That's where they got the idea from, my Ford Touch. Yeah. Buttons that don't exist.
Yeah. Yeah, I drove all the way here listening to the radio, and I had this thing on the screen that said no signal. I couldn't get that out.
But you heard the music nonetheless.
Yeah,
Do you still hear it, Gary?
Do you hear what I... No, that's a Christmas thing. Hey, we got a phone call here. Ben, let's bring it in.
Hey, it's Jonathan out in Old Penn, New Jersey. Quick question during the day before the show. I saw a BMW i3 today, and what impressed me the most was that they are the first economy car that actually runs with tall, thin tires and wheels. It looked really good, and I was just curious, do you think BMW was a leader in this trend for fuel efficiency and relatively good looks as far as the wheels and tires go, where they run tall tires but thin tires to get the best gas mileage and still give a nice side view of a vehicle? Do you think Toyota and other fuel economy company, car companies, will follow that trend? Is BMW a trend center in that particular portion? I personally, when I see a Toyota Prius with the little tiny rims, I'm like, oh, it's terrible. If they would just make the wheels a little taller on some of these economy cars, the side view wouldn't be so dumpy. That's my 2 cents. I look forward to the show, and I'm sure I'll call back. Thank you very much. Have a nice evening.
Yeah, so tall, skinny tires, a trend?
Well, but, I mean, you guys who really test cars to their limits, I mean, is...
They destroy performance.
I mean...
There is a reason, I am told, that BMW's European test drive of the i3 was all within the city limits of Amsterdam. And that's because handling at the limit is about 25 miles an hour.
I've driven the car. I'm knocked out by it. I think it's terrific. And Jonathan, this could be a trend. Could be. I don't know if it is. You know, the i3, they're eking out everything. They make the thing out of carbon fiber. I mean, they go with these skinny tires. I think they're 21-inch, I think, is what they go up to. But the 21-inch wheel, to the size that they have, they told me the contact patch is about the same as a 16-inch tire. So... it's not as big as some of the other tires that are out there, but I was very surprised at how well the car handled. It has a very low center of gravity. And
visually, the wheels work brilliantly,
I think.
Yeah.
But it has a low center of gravity because all of the weight with batteries really quite low.
That's right.
That causes that. And, I mean, if you think about it from an aerodynamic point of view, if you're trying to push a brick through the air, and actually two bricks because you figure you have two tires in the front, if you have smaller bricks, you have better aero. But the question is whether you could not manage the aero through other means in terms of splitters and ducts and
that's
like
a great
that.
Place to get rid of mass is you'd reduce the unsprung weight, which automatically improves the handling of the vehicle too. Mm-hmm.
But as you go into a turn, the little skinny tires are now taking a lot of that weight.
Yeah, but you know, as an enthusiast, I got to tell you, man, I'd much rather have a lower powered car that I can drive 9 tenths, 10 tenths all the time rather than a super high performance car that's for bragging rights only, mainly. Every now and then, maybe you get to open it up, but you don't really get to drive the car to its potential.
But in this case, the Cruze would be a much more fun car to drive than the i3.
Oh, I don't know, man. I like driving electrics.
Yeah.
Instant throttle response. I mean, instant. You see an opening in traffic, just go for it. Boom, you're there.
I suspect the
way they drive.
People who are going to be buying the i3 are basically going to be people who are doing it for the purposes of eking out 124.6 miles per gallon.
And making a tech statement.
So you're not going to drive it, at 10 tenths, because that isn't why I bought that car. I mean, BMW has plenty of other cars that they'll be more than glad to sell you to do that. I mean, there's no question about that. Now, maybe the i8, they're going to drive a little bit more aggressively just due to the nature of that car being, the sports car of the two. But
I was on a thing that they did. I had a miracle happen. We were on Laurel Canyon Drive in the L.A. area. And I say a miracle because somehow we made a wrong turn, had to come back, and there was no traffic. There was no traffic for, 10 minutes. And so got to go hauling ass down this mountain road. And that's when I went, this thing's a blast to drive. So, will it have the G-force cornering of a 3 Series? Probably not. Will it go through the slalom as quickly as another? Maybe not as high end top end speed. But I'm telling you, the car is fun to drive.
And everything you're describing is the reason that people still love old Alfa Romeos.
Yeah.
Because you could have a great time in them without doing anything that was crazy dangerous.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Just felt crazy dangerous.
Let's see. What other questions do we hear? AAH guest 130 says, what's the surprise for the Z06?
Can't say if there is one.
Well, we could if we waited till midnight. I think the embargo comes off at 12:01.
Tonight?
Yeah. Yeah, I believe so. The surprise for the Z06... I can give some things away without giving it all away. It generates more downforce than any car the GM wind tunnel has ever tested.
And
they've tested race cars.
And I think that it's safe to say that it is faster than most people expect.
That's saying a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
It makes the ZR1 pointless.
Hmm. Until the next ZR1.
Well, it depends where they price it. Depends where they price it.
Right.
Because I'm sure they're going to make money on that model.
That's a gorgeous car. I really liked it a lot.
Rum and Coke.
If it existed.
Rum and Coke wants to know. Hey, I'm trying to read a question here. Rum and Coke wants to know, is the Atlas concept the new F-150? Not the, right?
I think bits and pieces will be taken from it and put onto the new F-150, but production vehicle is always a production vehicle. It's going to be a little less exciting than everything else.
And the way Ford's kept the Atlas in everybody's mind since a year ago when they showed it would lead one to expect that there will be design elements from it.
Do they make it look aluminum? They're going to play that up that way at all? How do you connote an aluminum truck, and do they even want
to? Do you have to? Or do you just tell your customer, your fleet buyer, your farmer, your mining company, you're not going to believe the fuel economy on this thing?
Mm-hmm.
And does it even matter if you get into the details?
But isn't the big thing going to be, though, that not telling the farmer or the contractor or the construction worker, whomever, that they need to reach with this truck, that its fuel economy as much as its durability and its ruggedness and its capability of taking stuff. Because isn't it the connotation that aluminum is pretty much like beer cans that you just go?
I'm glad you brought that up, because every time I read a story that says that, I want to reach into the screen and say, have you never heard of the Bradley fighting vehicle? To the person who wrote that story. What about the Boeing 747? I think the people who are afraid that aluminum, farmers will be scared of aluminum, are not giving farmers enough credit for being smart, myself. But yeah, we'll find out.
If it's aluminum,
how will they sell it?
Yeah, I mean, as long as it performs like a truck always has.
Right, but I mean, that's what they have to prove.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah.
So it seemed to me that, so we could imagine when they do the reveal at, they're doing it at Joe Louis, I believe, that assuming they're going to actually be showing the truck, because we don't know that.
They're revealing something at Joe Louis.
Right. But I mean, can you imagine if they had like a giant boulder or something that came dropping down?
No, you want the Monty Python foot.
Or they painted a train tunnel on the wall and ran it into it.
Just something to say, this is
tough.
Yeah. Yeah. Built Ford tough.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, the first line of their story has to be capability, towing, durability, all that stuff. And once you have convinced people that you've got that beyond compare, then you start talking about fuel economy or anything else.
Right.
You're totally right there.
No, I think you nailed it. That's going to be the lead off to their press reveal of this truck, if it does indeed exist, and if it happens to be aluminum intensive, they got to show it's built Ford tough. I mean, they're going to hammer that message home.
But an issue, and I mean, I'm all for alternative materials, and I want everybody to have carbon fiber everything and so on. But one of the things, if you go back, remember when Nissan introduced the Titan pickup, right? That one of the things they did was they emphasized how their V8 engine was not a high-tech engine because they wanted an engine that people could actually work on, because that would be an issue. So they really emphasized that, right? Okay, now we take it up to an aluminum-intensive pickup truck. Well, what happens to pickup trucks? They get beat up, right? And we had Mike Swears from Toyota talking about the Tundra here, when we had the Tundra in the studio. Mm-hmm. And remember, he was talking about how he had the problem with his truck that somebody kept backing it into the thing, and so they had the three-piece bumper set up so he would save money and so on, right? Because trucks get beat up. I mean, that's just the nature of trucks, right? Well, if you think about it, people weld steel really well, and they're really familiar with welding steel, but welding aluminum, not so much. And so you begin to wonder, okay, what is the whole repair thing in terms of that?
And dealers who have never worked with big pieces of aluminum before.
Right.
But the learning curve's out there, and the Audi A8 was, I think, the first full aluminum car, at least of the recent era. And Jag's gone into aluminum heavily a long time ago. And Ford learned a lot in stamping aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
It appears they're relearning some of those lessons with the F-150.
Well, they've had an aluminum hood on the F-150 for years. I mean, it's always had that. I mean, everybody's got aluminum pieces on their cars.
What I want to learn is, where's the aluminum? I mean, where is it? Are we talking frame? Are we talking bed? Are we talking, the front clip? What are we talking here? All we've heard is aluminum intensive.
And half the time they won't even admit to that, which is the really maddening part about it. I'm hoping for a good, long, detailed presentation on Monday, because they've left all of these questions out there. And as you said, even if the first answer is, there's a lot of aluminum, a lot of subsidiary questions arise.
Mm-hmm. In fact, Ford's running its own PR thing, I want to say, both days during the show. They've got wall-to-wall presentations. I'm talking, and then a reception Monday night now, too. It's like, within the auto show, they're running the Ford Motor Company show, which I find very interesting. But who amongst us that has to cover everything else that's going on at the auto show can attend?
That's the question. Because I mean, you're talking about the stuff in the ballroom, right? All the special presentations. I'm not even sure I'll ever set foot in the ballroom.
A roundtable with Mullally Tuesday morning. And it's like...
opposite somebody's press conference, which is kind of dicey.
Oh, they do it all day. On Monday and Tuesday,
But I mean, the Mullally thing, I believe, is the same time as somebody else's press conference.
I asked him about the island.
Yeah.
I just saw a cool thing. Cadillac's teaming up with Uber, and you got to get an app. But as long as you're a journalist at the show, you can call a car to come get you. And they'll take you in a 15-minute radius out up through at least Midtown. And so at different events going on, I think this is a great thing.
That's very
Sometimes they have cars like at the Mesa in Frankfurt that'll take you from one end to the other, but this'll take you wherever you want to go within 15 minutes of Bobo.
Well, and then for those who don't know, Uber is a car sharing service that's beginning to rise up across the country. And
it's not car sharing so much as on-demand limos.
You're right. I'm sorry.
Right.
And, which is an interesting phenomenon in terms of alternative mobility approaches.
Dumbed down autonomous car. Yeah. You got a human to do it.
And they have this wonderful thing they call surge pricing, which means that at times when it's when there is more demand, they get to double, triple, quadruple, right, whatever their rates. I mean, there were apparently people paying $150 flat rates on New Year's Eve.
Wow.
At 10 o'clock on New Year's Eve, 8 p.m. New Year's Eve, cheap. It's an interesting
dynamic pricing.
Yes.
Yeah. So I mean, you have that. I mean, but think about it. So the airlines do, right? I mean, it's like, and then when you have this low,
they call
thing,
it revenue management.
And
so Cadillac is doing that to help people get around. That's fascinating.
Yeah, and they're going to do it during the charity preview too. I'm sure there's zipping VIPs around that, but I think it's pretty clever.
Yeah.
So. See some VIP standing there trying to make his phone work. Damn it, I need a car.
Yeah. Well, hey, we got a lot more questions here probably than we can get to, but probably a good time to wrap this up. So, Mark, thanks for joining us. It was a terrific half, let me tell you.
I had just this much material ready. Thank you.
Scotty Burgess. Together, man. We're going into battle here next week.
It will be I love the Detroit show, and there's so much stuff going on, and there's a lot of great cars, and I feel
it's going to be fun.
Special connection to the 200.
Oh, I'm not complaining. I wouldn't miss it for the world. But you know, I'll be glad when it's over. When next week is over, it's going to be. We got a ton to do. And Gary Vasilash, thanks for coming on, man.
John, thank you.
Oh, and we should let everybody know there will not be an Auto Line After Hours precisely because of the Detroit Auto Show next week. We have got nothing but craziness that we're going through. We're webcasting Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and we've been promoing all that, and I won't get into that now. I already did it at the beginning of the show, but it's going to be good. But, man, we're going to be glad when it's over.
Thank Robert.
Oh, and yeah, one last thing, right? We got to thank Katz's Delicatessen, which is our favorite place to go to in New York City when we're really hungry. And Robert at Katz has just sent us one of his unbelievable cheesecakes. So we're very grateful, and the entire staff thanks you because it's going to take the entire staff to eat it. So anyway, thanks everybody for having tuned in.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Your journey, our passion.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.